This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Recently, I had the chance to talk to some North Korean diplomats here in New York, and I asked them, who in our country understands North Korea best? The person they pointed to was Robert Gallucci. Gallucci is a retired diplomat, a scholar, and he was America's chief negotiator during the last big crisis over North Korea's nuclear weapons program. That was in 1994, and Gallucci's efforts then effectively froze their nuclear program for nearly a decade. I wanted to talk to Gallucci right now, more than 20 years later, because the situation with North Korea is, to say the least, extremely concerning. Kim Jong-un's regime has launched a series of ballistic missile tests. The Trump administration has responded with a successful anti-missile test of its own, and the rhetoric everywhere, on Twitter and otherwise, is out of control. What do we know and what do we not know about the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un? What does he want? What is the purpose of his not only testing ballistic missiles and making no secret of his nuclear program, but also publicizing it so widely, wanting to make it known?
So the question of what the North Koreans want, what's their grand strategy? I think most analysts would say that North Koreans would like to reunify the Korean Peninsula under their regime, all right, one Korea. But that, they must recognize, is not a near-term prospect. Short of that, the defensive objective of North Korea has been the survival of their regime. And what North Koreans have told me flat out on more than one occasion, what they worry about most is an American attempt to change their regime. And they point to Iraq and to Libya as recent cases of American decisions to change a regime they did not like.
But this anxiety and this rhetoric and this bellicose behavior far precedes the Iraq War of 2003.
Well, yes, but let's focus here a little on what we remember about 2003. And certainly one of the things we remember is that the administration was talking about the threat from Iraq being the use of a nuclear weapon. Do you remember the phrase, do not let the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud over Washington?
I sure do.
And so I suspect that you might. So if we keep these things in mind, that we were attempting to characterize the situation as one in which if we went to war against Baghdad, it would be a preemptive war. In other words, you are on the verge of being attacked and you must, for your own defense, attack. Now, at the time, many of us thought that was ludicrous, and afterwards, it was demonstrably ludicrous. Unfortunately, what we have right now is a case in which the administration could be arguing, and Secretary of Defense Mattis, who I don't think is likely to throw around words loosely, said on the 28th of May, just last month, that this situation of the North Korean capability is now present. We don't have to wait, he said explicitly, for them to test that intercontinental ballistic missile. This capability is evident. Well, that's beginning to sound like if we wish to protect ourselves, we may have to strike first. So this is not, a time of stability, I would say, pretty much dabbling in understatement here.
Or consistent leadership. I think Vice President Dick Cheney, when he was obviously in the Bush administration, said, "We don't negotiate with evil, we defeat it." And he was talking about North Korea there. Are we seeing then a return to that kind of philosophy in the Trump era, or is it just not consistent enough to locate?
I'm sorry. I have tried very hard to figure out what it is the leadership in this administration thinks about the plausibility of negotiations as a way to resolve this crisis, reduce the tensions. And I can't tell if Secretary Tillerson or Secretary Mattis or the National Security Advisor, General McMaster, or even the president, who has talked about willingness to negotiate directly with Kim Jong-un, and at other times seems much more bellicose than that. So you might not want to fault the administration for not having a well-thought-out policy yet, because it is relatively early.
But you're saying it's incoherent.
Incoherent is a tad more pejorative than I'm trying to be. What I would say is it's unclear, and it's difficult to discern, and it is not yet coherent.
Fair enough. Is it a mistake to take deterrence off the table? Or sanctions?
Well, deterrence and sanctions, there's a great deal of difference between them. Let's do sanctions first. It's easier. The effectiveness of sanctions has a lot to do with how Beijing responds. So I'm not opposed to sanctions, but I'm not one that thinks they're likely to produce the outcome that we want and need.
Now let's talk about China for a second. When Trump talks about North Korea, he often says that the key to diffusing the tension lies with China. It's unique in its ability to put pressure on the regime, and yet China is often described as basically unwilling to exert that kind of leverage that Trump expects.
So the Chinese want very much for the regime in Pyongyang to continue to exist. They'd like it to be less provocative. They'd like for the North Koreans to come to the table and have a negotiated settlement with the United States and the rest of the international community. And they're willing to let some pressure be applied to the North, but not enough pressure such that the leadership in the North will feel real pain. But I am persuaded that, in a sense, the president is right, that the Chinese do bear a responsibility here. But I don't know that they're going to be the ultimate key to resolving this.
I think when the average American who thinks about North Korea thinks about it at all, they think of a kind of a dark, comical, stereotype vision. How do you characterize North Korean society today and its leadership? We need to thicken our impression of what that country is all about.
Yeah, I'm going to try to give you some texture, but first, truth in advertising. I have never been to North Korea. I've been working on this issue since the early 90s, and for a variety of reasons, it was inappropriate for me to go when I was in the government working on the issue, and I've never thought it would be a terrific place to vacation. So I have not been there. All the people I've talked to in the last couple of years have talked about the changes in Pyongyang. Now, that's different than saying the changes in the DPRK. There is construction everywhere, everyone tells me. There are lots of automobiles on the street. There are lots of restaurants. There certainly is no feeling that I've gotten from talking to people who have visited that sanctions are depressing life in Pyongyang for the elites, and they, of course, are the ones who determine policy. One is struck in talking to even official North Koreans who have traveled by the extent to which they are comfortable with a cult of the Kims, the extent to which this is a totalitarian rather than just an authoritarian political system, the way in which they accept what is, by all reasonable accounts, a brutal regime's way of dealing with dissent. And all this makes the idea of a normal relationship between North Korea and the United States harder to imagine. And that's a problem for negotiations.
You mentioned Iraq before. Let me bring Libya into this. Have we taught countries like North Korea that it's worth it to have nuclear weapons? Libya got rid of its nuclear weapons, and the next thing you know, that was the end of Muammar Gaddafi. It's a very rough and crude depiction, but nevertheless, in Kim Jong-un's mind, that may well be the object lesson, though.
It is the description is rough, crude, and wrong. I don't mean to be rude here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead and be rude. But Libya never had nuclear weapons. They had a nuclear weapons program. They had one for a very long time. And there was some reason to think that given enough time, even Libya would eventually enrich uranium and could go to nuclear weapons. But more important, the thrust of your question is when the United States of America changes a regime, it costs us in terms of our credibility, and for countries with whom we are not getting on, and North Korea is certainly one, yes, it does motivate them to have a deterrent.
When Donald Trump left the White House the first time after meeting with Barack Obama, they had one face-to-face meeting. The one thing that he did say was that it was made clear to him by the Obama administration that the biggest threat that he would have to face was North Korea. If you were advising Donald Trump, what would you tell him at this point?
Well, the very first thing is something that's on my mind is that be cautious about your enthusiasm for the use of force to deal with the threat from ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons, that we relied on deterrence to deal with a country that had 30,000 nuclear weapons, 30,000. Soviet Union count, 1983-ish. North Korea has maybe 12. We lived with the threat from the Soviet Union, had no ability to defend ourselves.
But we had this impression during the Cold War and even after that as dangerous as that was, and it was apocalyptically dangerous, there was some kind of logical enemy on the other side of the table, that there was a certain kind of logic at work in the Cold War, that there is an irrationalism at work with North Korea. Or what do you think about that?
Well, you've got to do a little more than irrationalism, I think, if you're going to decide to go to war to prevent a war where there is no war coming, unless you think once the capability exists, the North Koreans will just have no ability to resist attacking the United States of America, which sounds ludicrous to me. So, I'm not an enthusiast for doing nothing, trust me on that, nor do I think we should abandon efforts at real ballistic missile defense. But the proposition that the North Koreans are, if you will, either suicidal, which is what we'd be talking about, or insane, unless that's your proposition, deterrence should work.
Do you think that this is a situation that can be resolved without face-to-face meetings?
No, I do not. I haven't seen really the effort at engagement. I was something of a critic of President Obama's North Korea policy. I thought the phrase strategic patience was an enormous mistake as a phrase, as
well as a
policy.
You felt he was just kicking the can down the road.
Well, to use the older lingo, I thought he was prepared to accept containment as a way of dealing with the North Korean problem. But the North Korean problem was getting substantially worse as we were in the process of containing it. And so I think a more aggressive policy aimed at engaging the North would have been more appropriate. I think now a policy of engagement where we in fact don't have preconditions to have talks about talks. We don't look at talks as a reward for North Korean behavior, so they have to behave good for 6 months or something. I don't think that's the way to go.
Mr. Gallucci, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Robert Gallucci, he was the chief U.S. negotiator with North Korea during the 1994 nuclear crisis. He's now director of the John W. Kluge Center at the Library of Congress.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.